Streaming 24/7.
Oh my God, it's better than I thought.
This is Radio Influence.
He got him in the white trunks. He hurt him.
That's beautiful.
Oh God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the tap. Wow.
And here comes a submission. And it's all over. It's
nice.
All over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich
one
Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome in to the MMA Report podcast right here on RadioInfluence.com. Of course, I am Jason Floyd, about to be joined by my co-host Daniel Galvan as we're going to look back at what happened last weekend. UFC on Fox 27 and Bellator 193, plus we will preview this weekend's UFC Fight Night card. Of course, that's UFC Fight Night 125, Machida versus Anders. Plus, we'll talk about some of the latest news and notes going on in the world of MMA. And by the way, speaking of UFC Fight Night 125, later on the podcast, you're going to hear my conversation with Eric Anders, of course, taking on Lyoto Machida in the main event of that fight card. Also going to have interviews with Bobby Volker, who's going to be the main event of the Shamrock FC card coming up on Saturday night. And we'll talk to Brian Moreno, who is making his return to MMA on Friday night, CES MMA 48, after two tours in Afghanistan. So we'll talk to him about his matchup coming up here on Friday night. Of course, that event will be on Access TV. Daniel, how's it going, man?
It's going good, Jason. It is going good. It's another glorious week. And I must tell you, just to jump right into it, were you the only one, or was it just me, as I watched the UFC on Fox card on DVR? I was looking at this main card lineup, and I had to double check that they put this card on Fox.
I tell you, I wanted to mention it last week, and I totally forgot about it. Was there any promotions for the Road to the Octagon special?
I mean, surely they tweeted out a link. I didn't
know about it until I saw it on my YouTube subscription feed. And yeah. I was like, wow, I mean, I'm like, maybe I just missed it, whatnot. I actually thought it was a pretty good show. I sat there and watched it. I thought it really gave some great insights into Jacare and Brunson. But yeah, I mean, it seemed like, and I think you can say this for the Bellator card last week as well, it just seemed like there wasn't a lot of promotion for the event, and, you know, and the television ratings showed it.
Yeah, man, they really are playing with fire with these cards, because I think Jacare is a star, not a star that draws ratings for sure. Really, he's going to thrive as the B-side fighter where he's sharing the billing with another top guy. But as much as I enjoyed watching the fights and as much as I'm invested in each and every guy on the card, man, this main card was rough. Just because when you do think of Fox, you think of star power. And we have seen them kind of not necessarily fit that standard. But this was so below kind of the standard that they usually do on Fox. And I thought I was making a mistake. I thought I should have been recording this on FS1, Jason.
Yeah, it was a fight card. And I saw some people mentioning this on social media earlier this week where they were like, is Saturday's UFC Fight Night card from Brazil actually better than the Fox card?
I would say, man, it's tough, but I would definitely tell you that heading into the card, I thought Jacare and Brunson is a better main event than Machida Anders. And then you go like, okay, well, Dodson Munoz is much better than anything else you got on the Fox card. So I guess you could make an argument, but it's relatively close. But again, that's not even a debate you kind of want to have. If it's relatively close, the nature of an FS1 card versus a Fox card, when they're like 1 week separated. So, yeah, I guess you could certainly make that case. I think clearly that Munoz-Dodson fight is above and beyond, maybe better than Jacare Brunson. But I wouldn't let the results of Jacare and Derek Brunson maybe color what I originally thought of that fight heading into it, because heading into it, I was really excited to see what was going to take place. I thought Derek Brunson and I was totally wrong when it comes to my fight prediction. I thought Derek Brunson was going to win this fight, but you know, 5.5 years wasn't enough time in between their original bout in this contest, because Jacare Souza, even though he's 38 years old, I mean, this was a performance where he really regained a lot of the momentum that he had lost, kind of asserted himself as a top middleweight. And unfortunately for Derek Brunson, this was just kind of similar to what we've seen out of him, is he pieces together these violent victories in a row, and he kind of gets you all aboard the hype train. But much like what we've seen earlier, this was just another big step back for Derek.
Yeah, I mean, when I think about my takeaways from last weekend, my number one takeaway, obviously, is Jacare Souza, what he was able to do. I mean, you know, look, I picked Derek Brunson. I thought that this was going to be the rise of Derek Brunson. Clearly, I was wrong in that one. And, you know, for Jacare, it was, hey, where is he at this point in his career? Goes out there, has a great performance. You look at Derek Brunson, and you know, to parlay what you were talking about there, this is a guy that he puts together the wins, then he gets that top matchup, and then he just can't get the victory. You know, you look at back, you know, when he came into the UFC, got those two wins, fights Yoel Romero, loses, then goes on to win five in a row. The most really notable wins in that streak, Lorenz Larkin, Uriah Hall, Sam Alvey. Then he fights Robert Whittaker, lose that matchup where I think everyone remembers maybe he fights a little different game plan. Who knows? Maybe he gets a victory on that night. Anderson Silva, you know, was not a great fight. Could have gone his way. Decision does not. You know, then, of course, he entered his fight with back-to-back wins over Dan Kelly and Leo Machida, which, I mean, look, Leo is not what he once was. But, you know, to me, that was kind of the biggest takeaway. But, you know, as we were talking about earlier this week and what we want to talk about on this podcast, you know, one of the things that I have here on my sheet is, you know, lowest UFC on Fox viewership in the history of UFC on Fox. Why? And, you know, and I guess, and, you know, seeing, you know, Jedi Goodman on Twitter had a great little piece that he noted about the UFC on Fox ratings from the history in the month of January. Every January, it's gone down. It's not a good trend. And, you know, and I saw a tweet where Jonathan Snowden had put a tweet out basically about how what reported pay-per-view numbers can be, you know, ballooned a little bit. And I saw, you know, someone reply to him and basically said that, hey, I used to consider myself a hardcore fan, but, you know, now I'm very choosy. And I think that when you look at this era of the UFC, which I think we can call this a UFC on Fox era that called for the UFC to run, I believe it's 35 events they have to do for Fox Sports, but, you know, between fight night cards and prelims and tough finales, is that the oversaturation of the product, putting quantity over quality, has just hurt the product. And I mean, look, and we've talked about it here on this podcast, I'm going to the next UFC on Fox event as a fan. I'll be in the stands just enjoying the fights with my buddies. You know, am I a little disappointed in that fight card I'm getting? A little bit, yeah. I mean, but it's just, and I think we are seeing, if you look at how the UFC is booking fights April and beyond, it definitely seems like they've realized that the first 3 months of the year, the fight cards aren't that deep.
Yeah, that's such a weird, weird trend, because to me, when I look at the logic of why that takes place in the first 3 months of the year, I can't put a finger on it. I would have expected that you look at that time in the year, and while you're going to have NFL playoffs kind of early on in that time frame, I think there's a lot of oxygen out there for the UFC to take in on the sports landscape. For instance, on Saturday, I could be missing something, but it didn't really feel like it was a big sports day. I know if you're a combat sports fan, the WWE was running a NXT show, and that certainly was a better card if you're a fan of both wrestling and MMA, but I did think there was a real opportunity to garner an audience because the competition wasn't heavy other than regular season basketball, and I guess hockey was going on as well. So that's a really weird trend. I can't put my finger on it. I was definitely not surprised. This was the lowest rating on Fox for sure. This was a weak card. I think when it comes to television ratings, you're really playing with fire. It's hard to predict what rating will be specifically. Sometimes there are pleasant surprises with the cards that you don't think will really resonate with the audience and you can't really figure it out. But if you consistently put out cards that lack buzz and lack fights that really grab an MMA fan by the Affliction t-shirt and beg them to watch, you're playing with fire. Because the funny thing is, this is not necessarily a problem that is only the UFC is having. Man, practically every entertainment or sports company his biggest problem the past few years has been oversaturation. You can point towards the NFL. You know, the one place where it may not be a problem is Netflix, because they don't care about viewership. They care about subscriptions. So you oversaturate that market. People, you know, whether or not they're watching, they're not selling advertisements. So when you look at the strategy for practically every company, it's been oversaturation. What that means is your random Joe Blow sports fan is a fan of not only the UFC, but all these other companies that are oversaturating the market. So never has time, I think, been more important to human beings. Not that we spend it more wisely, Jason. We're still out there scrolling through Twitter and Facebook and Tinder. But I do think time is a major, major component of just being a human. You don't want to waste 4 or 5 hours every single week watching a UFC card. So what happens? The cards that aren't lined up with the superstars are going to do worse and worse. And the one positive is I do think we are in an atmosphere where big events get elevated because they're big events. I think people want to watch shows that everyone else is watching. So the plus is I think when the UFC peaks with big time fight cards, maybe Cormier, Miocic, the audience may be bigger. But when it comes to Fox, FS1, the viewerships are going to continue to decline as long as they are oversaturate the amount of cards, because they simply don't have the star power to fill them up.
You know, one of the questions that we got in relation to this came from @BAbraham1988 on Twitter. He said, with last weekend's fight being the lowest ratings for Fox series, is UFC in danger of getting a lucrative TV deal? A good distribution deal is essential for the growth of the sport. And I totally agree with what Brian said at the end of the day, at the end of his comment there, about how important this is for the future. And I think there has to be concerns if you're the UFC. I'm not sure if we've mentioned on this podcast or not, but, you know, I think that, you know, if Fox is only willing to pay $200 million out there, and that's being put out there publicly, what they're willing to pay a year, I think that's very telling in terms of what the current rights holder is willing to pay. I mean, I think that's something that is very telling, and maybe there will be someone who comes in there. But when you look at these ratings, and it's not just the UFC ratings, it's, you know, Bellator ratings are down as well. I mean, their ratings on Friday night, you know, in the live plus same day DVR, 470,000 was the average. You know, they had 7 events in 2017 that were under 500K. They had 22 total events. So it's just not a good thing. And I know we've talked about it on this podcast. It just, to me, the way the MMA audience views things, you got to give them reason to sit home on a Friday or Saturday night. I can tell you when it comes to the UFC event, I watch this all via DVR. Anyone who's very familiar with Tampa knows this past Saturday was Gasparilla. And there's only a couple times a year that I get together with some buddies I went to high school with, and Gasparilla is one of those days. So, you know, I was with my buddies all day on Saturday, and so I watched this card via DVR. I did watch the Bellator card live, but, you know, there has been an issue you know, with main event bookings. We got another question from @JGU19510 about UFC main event bookings, saying, why do you think the UFC has been having so much trouble arranging main events lately? So many cards like Machida Anders, Stevens Choi, and the upcoming London card, to name a few, that got main events very late in the process. Now, I know with the Orlando event, they wanted to do Brian Ortega, Josh Emmett was a fight they wanted to do. Of course, that obviously did not happen. You know, Stevens Choi was not the matchup they wanted for St. Louis. I think part of this is timing. You know, I think that plays a lot into it. And I think the other part of it is when you're putting on so many cards, it does thin out the product.
Yeah, it's as simple as you have so many cards and you don't have that many stars. And when that's a problem, what becomes an even bigger problem is injuries or other reasons why you can't make fights, because they become that much more devastating. The replacement level fights are just so much lower than what you had envisioned. And at the end of the day, no one really cares whether or not you can't make the fight. If you can't make the fight, the ticket sales and the ratings aren't there, and it's kind of a shame. You know, the main events look fairly weak. I will say the main event here was solid, Jacare Brunson 2. The big problem was the undercard on the Fox. It just really didn't have much to resonate. And it's a bit of a shame because usually we would think of these cards as a vehicle to kind of build up stars. But if the eyeballs aren't there, you have fighters that aren't becoming more valuable. Like, this was a perfect opportunity for a lot of eyeballs to see, man, Gregor Gillespie, the way he looked against Jordan Rinaldi was just fantastic. I just thought at lightweight, this is a fighter who's now at 4-0 in the UFC. He looked great with him just manhandling a fighter with a real solid game in Rinaldi, with takedowns and positioning and finishing him off with ground and pound. It kind of sucks for Gregor because, like, this was a great performance. This is a guy who's a win away from 5-0 in the UFC and should be a lightweight on the rise, but unfortunately he's just not a name that resonates just because he's hurt by the oversaturation of the product.
Yeah, I mean, this card outside the main event did lack name value. Andre Feely gets a split decision win over Dennis Muirs. You mentioned Gregor Gillespie, a great performance against Jordan Rinaldi. Drew Dober and Frank Camacho, a great fight between those two guys. Drew Dober does get the win. I did speak to Frank Camacho's, or record this here on Tuesday afternoon. Actually, talked to Frank Camacho a little earlier in the process of editing that interview. We'll get that video up on the MMAReport.com, also on the MMAReport YouTube channel, by the way. Also have interviews with Vince Michel, who got a win on the preliminary card, and Jake Smith, who won over on the Bellator card. So look for those interviews over on the MMAReport.com. When you talk about those notable performers, Gillespie is one, sticks out. Jacare sticks out. The other one that really sticks out to you, Mirsad Bektik.
Yeah, he's a violent man. He was facing an opponent and got afraid of Pepe, who is also a wild man, a guy throwing spinning back kicks and whatnot. And Bektik, he really maintained his composure and landed just a sick and violent body shot. I mean, I can only imagine what it's going to be like for Pepe immediately after going to the restroom. It must be incredibly painful because that was violent. That was brutal. Bektik, great rebound after the devastating loss he had to Darren Elkins. I mean, you never want to be on the other side of a comeback of the year, but that was the problem for Bektik, and I think you nailed it, man. I guess a couple things I want to get to. One is, you know, Ross Pearson may finally have someone that has grabbed the torch in Randa Markos. The fact that she has fought 8 times in the UFC, Jason, and has not won or lost back-to-back is truly Ross Pearson-level consistency.
Yeah, that's an amazing stat there.
By the way, I'm sorry. Did you ask Frank Camacho? I don't want to spoil the interview, but I don't understand what he did to – let me find this judge's name. Andrew Hopper Jr.?
Oh, God.
I'm sorry, Andrew. Roy Silbert. How do you score round one of that fight for Drew Dober?
I did ask him. We talked about the scorecards. You know, look, that was a close fight. 30-27, I don't see. I think I even mentioned that in the interview. I don't see how a judge saw that fight 30-27. You know, 29-28, I thought, you know, and, you know, kudos to Frank to willing to talk after a loss. There's not, you know, a lot of fighters who, you know, I really appreciate him taking some time out there. And he's actually looking to fight Diego Sanchez. And in that interview also talks about a documentary that he is starting to film with his wife about autism and basically the lack of, I guess, knowledge in Guam on autism and how people in Guam can get help if their child has autism. So give you a little preview of what's in that interview I have with Frank.
That sounds good. I very much. That, Camacho just sounds like a great guy. The fact that he kind of returns after a loss and gets interviewed in a close fight.
Just one of those guys, just a fun guy to talk to. You know, he's always very upbeat. He's actually right now in Michigan. He's actually his wife has got some family in Michigan, so he's seeing some snow. And then he's going. Told me he's going over to San Diego, going to visit the guys there at Alliance, and before he heads back to Guam.
Wow. Speaking of kind of questionable decisions, he kind of gets lost, but at women's flyweight. It wasn't a robbery by any means, but I actually thought Justine Kish won 2 rounds against her opponent, Ji-Yun Kim. So I just want to throw that out there. And then I guess just moving back towards that co-main event, Jason. Man, we didn't talk about it too much, but had we, I would not have predicted to you that Andre Feely would have beaten Dennis Bermudez by out-wrestling him. I mean, he straight up out-wrestled Bermudez. He defended takedowns, and he was able to steal rounds with takedowns. So Andre Feely, it's the first time in his UFC run that he's won back-to-back fights. Bermudez was a tough opponent. It's clearly the best win for Andre Feely. But the big takeaway out of that one is Andre Feely has a really solid takedown game now.
Yeah, I'm actually working on trying to get a little video interview with Andre later on this week, so hopefully I'll have that up on the MMAReport.com. Over at Bellator, obviously you're going to mention Lorenz Larkin getting his first win in Bellator, decision win over Fernando Gonzalez. Jake Smith, how do you not mention what he was able to do? That win in 57 seconds against Steve Cazola. Look, Fernando Gonzalez misses weight once again. Third time he's missed weight. He missed it by 0.3 pounds for this one for a catchweight matchup of 180 pounds. And Bellator has to consider him a middleweight at this point.
I don't understand how you're supposed to be a welterweight. You set a catchweight at 180 and you missed the weight. You got to be a middleweight or a Fernando Gonzalez weight, because simply put, Jason, this is a fighter in Gonzalez that has missed weight three consecutive times. And this is a fighter in Gonzalez who has not fought at 170 pounds three consecutive times. Fernando has to fight at middleweight next. And in this fight against Lorenz Larkin, I think he showed enough to make you think that he's not going to get blown out of the water, because he didn't make it tough, especially in that first round for Lorenz Larkin. So I think Fernando Gonzalez absolutely needs to fight at middleweight. You miss weight. You see in California, you if you miss the fight day weigh-in, you can't fight in that weight class next. I think if you miss weight three straight times, you may have to be forced to fight at super heavyweight in California against Bob Sapp or something. But, you know, Fernando, that was a major negative, missing weight. I will say, though, I was impressed with his stand-up against Larkin. I thought Larkin was a pretty heavy favorite heading into that contest. I'm just a major fan of Lorenz, and it was nice finally for him. Three times in, gets that victory in Bellator. That would have been absolutely devastating for Lorenz Larkin, Jason, had he gone out there and lost. But he was able to get the win. And Fernando Gonzalez definitely made it tough, though.
Yeah, no, it was a good performance by both guys, but gets a win there. Jake Smith, the big winner, mentioned him, what he was able to do. Syed Awad, I think one of my takeaways when it comes to Syed Awad, it's time to see Syed get that number one contender's fight that he's always kind of been right there on the grasp of it. We now know the rematch between Primus and Chandler, April 13th in Missouri. You know, to me, you got to give Syed Awad that big fight he wants.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to get a number one contenders fight next, Jason, just because I think the next number one contenders fight's probably on Bellator 194 with Patricky Pitbull and Derek Couples. But he definitely needs an upgrade. JJ Ambrose is a solid fighter. It's just that for Awad, who's been in Bellator for a while and has pieced together three straight wins and looked really comfortable in there, winning a clean sweep on the judges' scorecards, he needs an upgrade for sure. And the name I will throw at you, let me know what you think, taking on Goichi Yamauchi.
I like that matchup, yeah.
Yeah, I think that could just simply be entertaining. And I think if you look at the fighters Awad has beaten, Jason, the level isn't there to make you think this guy should be shotgunned to a contendership, but this guy needs to be put in a position where, with the win, he's in a straight-up number one contender's bout. So that's what I would posit to you.
Yeah, that's I like that matchup. That's a fight that definitely makes some sense. Also, before we kind of move on here, I do want to thank the MMA Reddit poster, My Sweet Baxter, for naming this podcast as one of the best MMA podcasters out there. I thank you very much for that recognition. I was saw that. I was doing some little prep here for the podcast.
That's amazing. I love it. I love that. Thank you very much. What's his name?
My Sweet Baxter.
Thank you, My Sweet Baxter. You are a sweet man. I guess My Sweet Baxter has to know then, Jason. Who do you think Jacare should fight next? We got to reward him with that prediction.
Well, I mean, you got to put him. He's got to be. I did see, by the way, Robert Whittaker actually did some training there today. He put it up on his Instagram feed. I think you look at Robert Whittaker. I mean, depending on our Jacare, when Robert Whittaker comes back, I mean, are we talking potentially Jacare versus the winner of Romero and Rockhold, or do you put him in a number one contenders fight against Kelvin Gastelum?
I think Gastelum is probably the fight to make. I don't think Jacare should be put in a championship opportunity quite yet, especially for – I mean, Kelvin will blow a gasket. And, I mean, I would be so angry if I was Kelvin Gastelum and if Jacare jumped over me, having just lost to Whitaker and just won victory over Brunson. So I think Gastelum's the fight to make. I mean, the only other names I would throw out there is, like, Jacare versus Chris Weidman could be a fight as Weidman recovers from his thumb injury. And then another one – this could be his last fight, Zusa versus Michael Bisping. I know Bisping tweeted out that he wasn't fighting in London, so maybe he got a little call like, "Hey, you want to fight Jacare next?" I think those are the three names you look at.
Yeah, interesting names there. By the way, speaking of UFC on Fox 27, the big news really of the weekend came out right at the beginning of the ceremonial weigh-in broadcast, where it is going to be Stipe Miocic versus Daniel Cormier. UFC 226, and they will be coaches for this season of The Ultimate Fighter. In terms of the fight booking, really have no problem with it. When you look at the heavyweight division, where it's at, you look at where light heavyweight division is at, no problems with it. But I just, why do they need to be the coaches? Why?
Like, why do they need,
and I saw people like acting like this is going to be great to raise their stock. Have you not seen the ratings of The Ultimate Fighter?
It's going to be a negative because they have to spend time recording the show for them. So they're going to waste. They're going to spend time there instead of actually training hardcore.
Daniel, like, they're two of the nicest guys in the world who are not trash talkers. So it's like, and really, at the end of the day, the show is about the undefeated fighters that are going to be on this show. It's not about the coaches. So, I mean, I get maybe that the fact that this fight was going to happen in July and this is a reason, but God, can we just put like retired fighters as coaches for The Ultimate Fighter?
I know. Or look, let's just not pretend like it's going to mean anything. The fact that they're on The Ultimate Fighter, it's not going to mean anything for Cormier and Miocic, and it's not going to mean anything for this show. The most surprise, like if someone comes back in the future, they could tell me a whole bunch of things that would surprise. They could tell me the XFL is more popular than the NFL. They could tell me something as crazy as, I don't know, Fernando Gonzalez makes weight. But the most surprising thing they could tell me is the Ultimate Fighter had a rebound and people care about it. All right, I am so done on believing in the Ultimate Fighter. I mean, it is much like a friend that just lets you down time and time again.
Put the show in bed.
I mean, you can do the show. You can do the show. You got to fill the content. But don't tell me it's going to be bigger and better and people are going to care, Jason. I mean, just put it – you can do the show. But it's just a really long edition of the Dana White Contender Fight Series. And the cool thing about the Dana White Contender Fight Series is – we're not bored with 40 minutes of like weird video prior to the fight. So put the show to bed.
And as a fighter, you don't got to live in Las Vegas for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Locked away from technology.
I feel bad for, locked away from technology. I mean, that's insane. I feel bad for Kyler on the show and maybe too well. This is a guy who is just going through the obstacle course of the fight pass obstacle course, right? Like he 5-0 from Arizona. And he's already performed on Dana White's Contender Series. Now he's got to do the Ultimate Fighter. I mean, I do feel bad for him, but look, he's undefeated, you know, much like every single other person on the show. I do think he's a name you look at and say he could actually win the whole thing. But
I would tell you the name I would mention, lightweight, Luis Pena, who's 4-0. He's fought there in the Midwest scene, also fought in Valor Fights. At featherweight, Bryce Mitchell is a guy I would look at.
I think Bryce Mitchell is going to be the – not that people are going to watch the show, but if people watch the show, I got a feeling that Bryce Mitchell is going to be one of the characters the show builds around. Mm-hmm. Just because, one, he just looks – okay, number one, the reason why. His name's Thug Nasty. And when you think Thug Nasty and you look at his pictures – you don't think Bryce Mitchell. I mean, this guy looks like he just got out of a country club, you know. He doesn't look like Thug Nasty, but eight submission wins, I think Bryce Mitchell, Thug Nasty. I have a feeling he's going to be like a character on the show. Maybe one of the characters that everyone hates, but he's a name to watch. And then, you know who we're going to talk about? Richie Smolin, just because he's teammates with Conor McGregor, you know. Jeez, we're going to get that whole deal again. And then Obviously, got to keep an eye out to see if I think Stipe Miocic's teammate is on the show, John Gunther. So I'm sure that'll be his first overall pick, and that will be a big mess up. But maybe he's actually the best guy on the show. So I don't know a whole lot about all these guys, despite the fact they're undefeated. I like the concept. You know, I like the idea of let's try and make Stipe a bigger star. It's just like, dude, this isn't going to work. But also, I can't believe this fight is happening. I'm excited. I think it's a great idea. But I will say that, man, that you being an MMA fan or a follower of the UFC, it makes you not trust anything ever. They lie to your face all the time. And it's not just the UFC, man. It's like Daniel Cormier shouting out everyone but Luke Rockhold about how they're going to be champions post-fight. And he cleared it up later. And he tells you, oh, Cain's going to be heavyweight champion. A week later, the man is challenging for the heavyweight title. That's the only part where there's negativity, where I'm just sad that I can't trust my guys. But Stipe Cormier, great fight. I think the UFC, what they need to do is identify they just need to make big fights. And they need to identify guys who, with the right opponent, can draw well. And I think Stipe and Cormier cannot carry a pay-per-view by themselves with a weak opponent. They can do it real well with a strong opponent, and I like the fight a whole hell of a lot.
You know, and I think we're going to see more of these type of fight bookings as the year goes on, as the UFC is trying to get that big TV deal. The talk is they're going to do, you know, potentially do three title fights on that fight card. DJ Dillashaw as a co-main, and then also have Cyborg versus Nunez. But we got this question from Scott, and I thought it was kind of interesting. It was about this fight booking. He says, how big is the Ultimate Fighter 27 and UFC 226 if John Jones doesn't screw up?
UFC 226 is huge. Ultimate Fighter 27, I still believe, would mean Jack S.
Come on. Could you imagine filming John Jones partying in Las Vegas?
I don't think that would happen, Jason. I feel like that would be a bad, bad look. I want to make a point, though. Nunez Cyborg should not be on that card. Nunez Cyborg should be its own pay-per-view because I have underestimated the draw that Cyborg is, and Nunez is her best opponent yet. Maybe she's not a bigger star than Holly Holm, but geez, that's a compelling fight. And maybe she is a bigger star. I'm not super sure, but Nunez Cyborg, I think you're wasting another great buy right there by burying it. I mean, it's going to be huge if you do those three fights, but Nunez Cyborg has the potential to probably be the third or fourth biggest pay-per-view they'll do all year.
Yeah. It would be, you know, and Miocic Jones is the route they wanted to go, of course. So we'll see what happens with John Jones. That's kind of still a to-be-determined story of whether we see it there, you know. But, you know, when you look at light heavyweight, no clear title challenger ready to go. Gustafsson's got an injury. You know, Cormier earlier this week did say that, you know, reached out, you know, talked to Cain Velasquez about this opportunity, talked to Justin Willis, who's a UFC heavyweight, about this as well. Everyone's on board, and, you know, and Cain, you know, said this week as well that, you know, basically he wants a tune-up fight. He needs to go in there and show what he is and mention potentially fighting July 7th, which I think makes a lot of sense because, well, wouldn't be a bad backup plan if DC doesn't make it to July 7th.
Yeah. You know who he should fight is Alexander Gustafsson. F it. That's Bellator did it first, but let's do it second. The heavyweight, light heavyweight Grand Prix. Well, so if Miocic bows out, you do Gustafsson Cormier. And yeah, so that's my suggestion.
Why not do Cain Verdum?
Oh, I like that fight. I think that's probably what you do. My man, tune-up fight. That is not a tune-up fight.
Yeah. No, it's not a tune-up fight, but I think in terms of if you're looking to make a quote-unquote number one contender fight, that's got to be the matchup.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess – okay, so then I guess just going the other way, what do you do with Alexander? Does he just not fight until he gets a title shot? Because, like, he is really – his demolition derby of Glover Teixeira was just great and, like
– First off, okay. If OSP wins next month against Lyra Latifi, you want to make a bet that OSP Alexander Gustafsson for the interim title happens at some point this year?
Jesus, if that happens for the interim title, Jason, I'm going to get so angry. I'm going to have a rant.
Get ready to get angry, because look, you know there is more than a 50% chance that the UFC puts on an interim light heavyweight title fight sometime this year.
It makes me angry, but you're probably right. And man, that was one of our New Year's resolutions, wasn't it? And I don't know if it's being broken by the lightweight deal, but I hate interim titles. They're so stupid.
Yeah, we are going to talk about that lightweight picture, but we do have no Bellator event this week, but we do have a UFC event. UFC on Fight Night 125 down there from Brazil, going to be headlined by Leo Machida versus Eric Anders. Going to let you hear my conversation with Eric Anders. I had a chance to catch up with him late last week before he head down to Brazil about his matchup against Leo Machida. And one of the things that people may or may not know about Eric Anders is that his wife is Brazilian. He actually spent the holidays down in Brazil. So I talked to him about that and his matchup against Leo Machida. When you say you wanted to fight Leo Machida, and look, I love when fighters give you a name. Was there part of you like, oh man, there's no way I'm getting this fight?
Oh man, you know, I don't know. I just kind of, you know, shot my half court jumper and, you know, it swish. So, you know, man, if you don't ask, you know, closed mouths don't get fed. So, you know, I figure I'd take a shot in the dark and, you know, see what happens.
When the fight comes in and you're signing the paperwork, what does your head coach Chris Connolly say to you?
Man, you know, he was just, he's just like me. You know, he's ready to fight, you know, as often and against whoever. So, you know, he was all about it and, you know, was glad the fight was able to happen.
And, of course, I know that you went down to Brazil to spend the holidays with your wife's family. You stayed at your grandparents' house down there. I mean, as you're down there, how did the Brazilian MMA fan treat you?
Man, you know, I was quite surprised because, you know, you always hear about how passionate the Brazilian fans are about Brazilian fighters and whatnot. So, you know, I figured when I went to go train, you know, I just kind of walked into a Gracie Baja and was just like, hey, you know, I'm in town, whatever. But the MMA community is so small that, you know, before long, everybody knew I was a fighter, but, you know, everybody was cool. You know, they were showing me stuff and, you know, very nice people. And, you know, they all say that they're pulling for me. All the guys that I trained with, Pimpolio, Goichi Yamauchi, and, you know, man, just, they're a bunch of great people. And, you know, I was happy I was able to work with them a little bit.
I was going to mention Goichi cause I saw you put a picture up on your Instagram page, you know, what was your, you know, dealing with him? Obviously, he's obviously a much smaller guy than you are, but very well versed on the ground. Is that pretty much the biggest takeaway from him is just a lot of the tricks that he uses on the ground to catch guys?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, when I was in, I met him at a Gracie Baja, and, you know, I wasn't even sure who he was, you know. And, man, I was just getting tooled up by this little guy, and I was just like, man, what's going on right now? And then, you know, we got to talking, and I was like, oh, you know, him and I fought on the same Bellator card in Memphis that one time I fought for Bellator. So I was like, man, you look really, 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 really familiar. And, you know, he's like, yeah, I fought for Bellator, yada, yada, yada. And, I was just surprised at how strong and good his jiu-jitsu was.
So, you know, I mentioned about going down to Brazil for the holidays. So where does your wife's family live at?
Curitiba.
Obviously, a lot of fans will know that city very well. You know, in terms of from her family, how much of her family is actually coming to your fight on Saturday?
They got a pretty good bit coming. You know, it's not very expensive to catch a flight to Belém from where they're at. So, you know, I'll have a big support community from the a lot of support from the Brazilian community.
Of course, everyone knows Leo Machida's style, and you know, it's not a style that you can just find in any gym. I saw you went to South Carolina Upstate Karate with Stephen Thompson and Ray Thompson. Obviously, Stephen helped you mimic the style of Lyoto. I mean, what's the biggest challenge when you're fighting Lyoto's style?
I think that you know, he changes pace and tempo very well. So I think that a lot of his attributes have diminished over the years. I think, you know, when he was younger, he was just much faster than everybody else. But at the same time, he doesn't have like a rhythm that he follows. So I think that'd be the biggest challenge is, you know, he'll kind of sit back, you know, and then explode forward. So I think that'd be the biggest challenge to pick up the timing of the Lyoto. But I think Stephen Wonderboy was able to provide an awesome look. I think he's younger, more explosive, and different but similar, and better at it than what Lyoto is. So, you know, now that I've been exposed to it, I think it was very beneficial. So now when, you know, I get in there with Lyoto, it's not going to take a round or two to pick up his timing and the way he's moving and whatnot.
Actually got a question from a listener of mine asking about your opinion on Lyoto's karate blitzing style. Is it one of those things of, you know, I hear a lot of guys say you got to be patient with Lyoto. You just can't just rush in there. But overall, what's your thoughts on how he does blitz with his karate?
I think he's lost a little bit of power off his punches. You know, he was catching Rockhold. When he fought Rockhold, he caught him a few times. But, you know, Rockhold doesn't have the strongest chin. And, you know, he didn't even rattle Rockhold. So, like I said, I think his style is very attribute-based. And now that he's a little bit older, he's not quite as fast and quite as strong as he used to be. So I think a little bit of heat is coming off his punches. Just constant pressure, not rushing in, but, you know, just steadily being in his face, throwing punches, and making him react versus you reacting to him is the way to beat him.
I know there's been some reaction to when this fight was announced of like, hey, why is Eric getting this fight? And obviously, hey, you call it out, you're taking advantage of the opportunity, but I did see on your Instagram, you said, hey, I'm coming in to shake this division up. I mean, it's one of these things where you're like, look, there needs to be a new face of this division, and why not me?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think I'm more than capable of taking on everybody in the division. I think I'm a tough matchup for everybody in the division. So, if they don't think so now, then after I dispose of Machida and, you know, maybe a few more fights, you know, they'll know.
Of course, Lyoto's lost three in a row, you know, four of his last five. You mentioned about you see a different fighter. Do you see a drastically different fighter, the fact that he's cutting down to 185 as opposed to when he was fighting at 205?
Not really. I just think that he's a little bit older now. Like I said, I feel like he's very attribute-based. He uses a lot of speed to beat people. And, you know, as you get older, you know, those attributes diminish. As well as your chin, you know. Lyoto's been through some wars. He's taken it. But I just don't think that he can take it anymore. So I touched him a few times with the left hand or, you know, whatever. I don't think he'll be there.
One of the things I did see on your Instagram feed, you have a signature shirt that I know is available at your gym. But can any of your fans order this online?
Yeah, absolutely. They actually go online today at infinitecbd.com. You can get on there and order. There's three or four different styles that you can get. So, you know, yeah, I'll go ahead and do that. It'd be greatly appreciated.
I noticed that on your social media, CBD was something that you have gotten into. How did you get introduced to it?
I'm not really sure. Maybe somebody had it and I tried it and, you know, I realized the benefits and I got linked up with Infinite CBD. They sent me a bunch of products, you know, it's, several different ways that you can get it. You know, they got gummies, capsules, vape pens, massage creams, all kinds of stuff. So, and I did some research on it and saw how beneficial it was, especially for your brain. You know, studies have shown that, CBD can help prevent, Alzheimer's, dementia, CTE, which me coming from football and now doing MMA, that's a pretty big deal. So, stabilizes blood sugar, does a lot of things, reduces inflammation. So, you know, I think that anybody, you know, everybody should be on it.
We haven't talked since your Crimson Tide won the national championship. I'm sitting there watching it. Someone who has been on the broadcasting side of football for 15 years now, to make a decision to bench your starting quarterback at halftime. What's going through your mind when that decision's made?
Man, Nick knows his team better than anybody else. So, you know, I mean, you're already down 13-0. The offense hasn't been productive at all. So why not go with the new guy, you know?
Is there any other coach that has the balls to make that decision?
Nick Saban.
I mean, it's crazy because that's what the decision. If it works, you look like a genius. If it doesn't, he's criticized for 6 months.
Well, I mean, at the same time, you know, what does he have to lose?
Yeah.
You know? They're already down 13-0. Georgia's defense is dominating. Georgia's moving the ball on offense. You know, so, you know, what, you know, that was the ace up his sleeve, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it just shows why he's the greatest college coach around. There's no question about it. But in terms of this fight, and I know when we talked last time, you said 4 to 5 times a year is ideally. I know you even mentioned like, hey, if David Branch needs an opponent in Orlando, sign me up. I mean, but as you have mapped out this year, what's kind of the plan?
Take them as they come. We're looking to get through this Machida fight, and after I do that, because everything goes according to plan, like I think it will, I should be healthy and ready to go for February 24th in Orlando. Should David Branch want that action, I'm all about it. So if that's what he wants, he can get it. And then if not, then we'll look for somebody else at another time.
Is one of the toughest parts about this fight just the amount of travel that you have to do in terms of making sure your weight is right from being on an airplane for that amount of time?
Not really. We have an 11-hour layover in Sao Paulo. And my father-in-law, he actually works. He's an airplane mechanic at the airport down there.
Okay.
In Sao Paulo. So, he's going to pick us up, take us to the gym, let us work out and whatnot, So we'll have some time to kill in Sao Paulo, and I think it'll be very beneficial instead of just on boom, boom. It's a 10-hour flight, so hopefully I get plenty of sleep.
Is that what you try to do, sleep? I mean, I was talking to Frank Camacho, who had to fly from Guam over here in the United States for his fight, and he was talking like, man, he goes, I can sleep for 8 hours. I still got another 8 more hours to go. I mean, if you can't sleep, I mean, do you just like, pop on, some movies, read? What do you do to kind of, pass the time?
Yeah, they got movies on the airplane. I'm trying to remember what I watched. I watched a bunch of the Batman movies and stuff when we went down there this last time. So, hopefully they updated the movie list and whatnot and see if there's any movies on there I haven't seen yet.
And, of course, everyone's going to be able to see this fight go Saturday night, main event of UFC Fight Night live on FS1. Main card starts at 10 p.m. Eastern time. Eric's fight will probably start around 12:15, 12:30 Eastern time. Eric, as always, man, I appreciate your time. And, of course, let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
I appreciate it. You guys can follow me on social media, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, at Eric Anders, E-R-Y-K-A-N-D-E-R-S.
Daniel, there was my conversation with Eric Anders. And, if you've not seen the betting odds for this one, Eric Anders is nearly a 3-1 favorite.
Yeah, I saw that. And guess what? I'm going to be stupid. I'm going to be so stupid, Jason. Because I don't want to like jump to it, but I'm going to jump to it. Like, we're going to talk about underdogs and prop bets. And even though he hasn't looked good since 2014, man, Lyoto Machida plus 240 against Eric Anders, Jason, I'm taking that. I'm taking that to the bank. I'm going Lyoto Machida over Eric Anders because I'm just the gullible idiot when I see odds like that and a name I know in Lyoto versus just a tank of a prospect and a guy who – I don't know if you've heard this, but a former Alabama college football player. I hope you tackled that extensively in your interview.
We did talk a little bit about Alabama winning the national championship. And, obviously since he played for Nick Saban and the balls that Nick Saban had to change his quarterback at halftime. But this is a prime example of Eric Anders called for this fight, calling for it to be on this fight card. And you know what? If you make a realistic call out, there's a good chance you're going to get the fight.
Yeah, there's a good chance he's going to win. He's the favorite. I just can't pull the trigger here. Just because as promising as he looked, and what I love about Eric Anders is he really does a nice job of not only having great physical tools, but the skills themselves have developed so nicely. It's a big jump up in competition. And Lyoto has looked asleep at the wheel in his last few fights. I mean, he is the sole reason why Derek Brunson main evented a Fox show this past week. And mixed martial arts is a sport where you age overnight. And Machida may have already aged. And the perception of who he was probably colors in what I think he's going to be, even though that's not who he is anymore. Still, though – it does seem like a major jump up for Anders, and I got to think that Machida, if he still has any ability to get back to where he once was or at least get back to 85% of where he once was, nothing's going to provide more motivation than fighting in Brazil and having lost three in a row.
Yeah, I mean, and you look at this being a hometown fight for him. You know, it's tough to have faith here in Lyoto Machida, and he does turn 40 in May. So you do. I think there's going to be questions if he does lose on Saturday night. Will that be the last time we see Lyoto Machida fight? But as I think, you know, my pick is Eric Anders in this fight. And the more as I think about how this fight plays out, I think Eric Anders gets this fight against the fence. He gets this in a close fight, does not fight at range, ends up taking Lyoto Machida down, and he gets a TKO finish on the mat.
Yeah, I think he has the ability to bully Lyoto Machida into a pulp, and it could be really bad early on if initially he gets that takedown successfully. I think that there's an incredible likelihood of that taking place. I do think Machida is well-versed in his ability to defend takedowns, his ability to create distance, get off the cage, and when he gets down, get back up. That's going to be a tough, tough challenge against Eric Anders. I think he's going to be able to do that. And when it stays standing, I don't think Lyoto is going to light up Eric Anders throughout each and every round, but I do think he's going to knock him out with a solid counter combination. And he's going to have to make sure, though, that this fight, for the most part, plays out on the feet, which is not a guarantee. But we're going to know early on how this is going to go, because it shouldn't be too long until Eric Anders looks to initiate the clinch, the takedown attempts, because that is clearly where he is a massive favorite. As good as Machida may be as a grappler, I think Anders' pure strength and power will be enough to kind of evade those takedowns and really bully Machida if he gets him on his back.
When you look at the rest of this card, there's other notable fights that Daniel had me very interested. You already mentioned the co-main event, John Dodson, Pedro Munhoz. By the way, Pedro Munhoz, plus 130. I like that value there on Pedro Munhoz. You also got Valentin Shevchenko making that 125 debut. And I did see someone mention this the other day on social media. Since Montano won the 125-pound title, the UFC has done zero to promote her.
Yeah, who in the hell knows who the women's flyweight champion is?
The hardcore MMA fan base, that's it?
Yeah, that's about it. I tell you, I mean, you talk about heavy underdogs. What are the odds in this fight, this Shevchenko?
Shevchenko is a 9-1 favorite.
Wow. Wow. Imagine if Priscilla, I'm going to mispronounce her name, I might have to wait until watching her on the broadcast to get it right, but Priscilla, I can't even, Pacheco Arrow?
Sure.
Oh, yeah, sure. We'll figure it out come fight night. But undefeated fighter with, you know, maybe zero quality wins potentially, but undefeated fighter, unknown. Potentially she shocks the world. Maybe we're underselling how good she is. This is a perfect opportunity for her to do such a thing. I think if she does come out here and beat Valentina Shevchenko, you're going to be hard-pressed to find a bigger upset the entire year.
Yeah. You know, Thiago Santos, Anthony Smith kicking off the main card. I think that's the right fight to kick off the main card with, most likely. Someone's going to get knocked down that fight. Sergio Moraes, Tim Means, I like that matchup. Marlon Vera, Douglas Silva, Andrade, I like that matchup. And then on the fight pass prelims, Joseph Morales, Davison Figueiredo fight is another one that has me interested in.
Yeah, I think those are all great fights. I really think I guess the fight that isn't on my top three fights, but a fight that I think will be great is Andrade and Marlon Vera. I think that has potential to be fight of the night. Not my favorite to be fight of the night. I think that could be pretty good. You mentioned Santos, Anthony Smith. Yeah, if this one gets past, you know, round two, I would be totally shocked. I think Marcelo Gomes is a guy I want to keep my eye on just to see how he performs against Timothy Johnson. If he comes out and looks like a god, this could be clearly a fighter at heavyweight to keep an eye on. But Timothy Johnson presents a tough challenge. And, Patrick and Hadzovic, Demir Hadzovic at lightweight, two guys who both have something in common. They got pasted by Mirbak Taisimov, but they have plenty of talent outside of that. So it's a solid card, especially if you're a hardcore MMA fan. But, when it comes to your top three fights, how's that look?
Dodson Munhoz would be my number one.
Totally agree with you. That, to me, is the best fight of the night.
Number two, I'd probably still go Machida Anders.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, yeah, yeah. You know, what is Liotto at this point? Can he bounce back? And what is the ceiling for Eric Anders? I mean, this is a guy that it still baffles me that he goes into Bellator on a prelim fight, wins, I think, in 23 seconds, I think it was, and they don't even offer him a multi-fight deal. I'm still baffled by that, especially when you look at Bellator's 185-pound division. Just, I can't believe that. So, to me, that would be my number two. In terms of number three, you know, I'm looking at fights that probably, you know, get me excited because I think how it plays out. How about Sergio Moraes and Tim Means?
Yeah, no, we're completely identical with our top three fights. We are in sync, and I think we had the exact same thought process. More often than not, if Valentina Shevchenko's on a fight card, she'll probably work her way into one of our top threes. She's so talented, likely a flyweight champion. But because of her opponent level, it's hard to even throw her in there. And the reason – I mean, when you were kind of looking at comparing the Fox card that we just had versus the FS1 card that we have here, the reason why I kind of pushed back on saying FS1 card was better is because similar to the Fox card, I do think this is really top-heavy. I think once you get past – I mean, I think when we do the exercise top three fights, there's a part of us immediately that doesn't want to put the main event in it just because, you know, it is a fight in which there is a slightly heavy favorite there. But then you look at the card and you're like, no, this has to be. This is a top three fight. So after Machida Anders, it does get pretty weak. But number three, Means Moraes. Appointment viewing fighters, each of them. Tim Means more so than Moraes, but I just think that to me is the favorite to be fight of the night. With Andrade and Marlon Vera, I would pinpoint as number two. I don't think Dawson Munoz is guaranteed to be exciting. I don't think it's guaranteed to be boring either. But when I look at that one, what's compelling is just the talent level of both guys. I think you're going to see a real tactical approach in a fight that goes the distance.
Main card also has Prezeris against Dez Green. Interesting to see. Obviously, Dez Green, a guy that I've talked to many a times and you know, continues to evolve as a striker. Clearly known for his wrestling. We'll see how well that goes. He does there. In terms of when you look at the betting odds, we've mentioned a couple of them. We mentioned how big of a favorite Valentina Shevchenko is. You know. You look at the Anthony Smith, Thiago Santos. Anthony Smith plus 230. I like Thiago Santos to win that one, but would it shock me if Anthony Smith goes in there and gets to win? No. Is there any ones that really stick out to you?
Well, in terms of underdog, I circle Demir Hadzevic plus 190. That's a guy against Alan Patrick I would look at, but I do have one prop bet. Do you have a guess on which fight I'm looking at for that prop bet?
Tim Johnson, Marcelo Guam?
No, I'm not. I am looking at straight up. Look, man, you want to make money? This is how you do it. You look at where everyone else isn't, all right? Women's strawweight, Maya Stevenson, Pollyanna Viana. That's my prop bet. Under 2.5 rounds, plus 105. I'm taking that. I think Pollyanna Viana, who is 9-1, finished all 9 of her opponents in victory, 25 years old, going up against a 6-4 opponent who is 35. I think Pollyanna Viana is in under 2 rounds. And then you look at Maya Stevenson's fights, only one of her wins gone the distance. So I'll go under 2.5 rounds at plus 105 as my prop bet.
Well, I will tell you this. I think I saw the stat. I forget what it was in 2017, but I think it was like 60%+ of women's fights in the UFC went the distance.
That's going down to 59%.
Yeah, not necessarily a good number there, but I'll be watching these fights live. I've got nothing going on Saturday night, so I'll be sitting on the couch. I'll be watching UFC Fight Night 125. Also on Saturday night, if you're looking to watch some regional MMA, Shamrock FC 302 is going to be taking place. Of course, that's on ShamrockFightingChampionships.com. And one of the men that's going to be the main event is our next guest, and that's Bobby Volker. Of course, you remember Bobby from his time in the UFC, also in Strikeforce. He's going to be stepping inside competition for the first time since losing to Zach Pucha last year. So I had a chance to catch up with him and talk to him about his matchup coming up on Saturday at Shamrock FC 302. So, Bobby, as always, man, I appreciate time. It has obviously been some time since we've seen you in competition, since that fight that unfortunately did not go your way last year. So, man, what has been going on since the end of May last year?
Just been getting back in training, working, staying busy, I always like staying busy. So just staying busy, improving, the one good thing about a loss, it's never good to lose, but the one good thing is, you get a lot more out of a loss than you do a win. So that's just, that's the best way you got to look at it. And that's what you got to take from it and just better yourself. And that's what I've done. And that's what I'm ready to show everybody.
What was the biggest takeaway from the defeat against Zach?
It was just pretty much make sure your mind's in the right place, because I trained hard physically. I was there. Everything was there. I had some little family issues. I never make excuses. I mean, he brought his A game and I did. He won. He beat me up. Congrats to him. He's a great guy. But, my mind just wasn't right for fight mode. And that's something I've learned in the past, but after so many fights, you tend to forget the stuff you've learned. So then you got to be retaught it. And I was retaught that. So now I'm ready to show everything and then some that I got.
Is that something that, and I guess is more, throughout your career where you're leading up to a fight and you just kind of feel like your mind's not there? I mean, how do you still go into the fight knowing like my mind's just not right heading into this matchup?
At the time, when you're going into a fight, no matter what, you have to pump yourself up. You got to feel like you're ready. But when you get in there, your actions really show if you're physically ready, mentally ready, emotionally ready, that really shows that. That's really the true test. When you actually get in there, you start moving, you start letting them fly. And then you really know, okay, I'm on task, I'm in my groove. I'm flowing. I'm lighting them up. And that's my game, So you can know a little bit leading up to it, but you really don't know until you step in there and you just let it all go.
And of course you've got this matchup coming here where, this fight's obviously just right around the corner, taking on Matt here.
Yeah.
Assess Matt as an opponent. What gets you excited about this matchup? And also what do you have to be looking out for what Matt offers?
Well, honestly, it was Matt. They changed the opponent about, I think about 3-4 weeks ago. I guess he tore his labrum or hurt his hip or something like that. So he ended up being out about a month ago. So they brought another guy in from Oklahoma. I believe his name was, I've looked him up, but I don't remember names too well. I believe it's Drew Lipton. I believe he's a wrestler from Oklahoma area. So that's the guy I'm fighting now. So I had to change it up a little bit, but I mean, a month is plenty of time to prepare for anybody when you have the, the shape and the cardio already maintained. So I'm ready to go.
I mean, you've been in this game for a long time. A change in opponent is not going to affect you, but when you do have a change in opponent, is it more of one of those things of like, just like, okay, is this a different stance guy? I mean, is that really just a big thing of like, okay, just tell me how this guy's different and let's go?
I mean, you probably need to look at a few things, man. Maybe look at his high points and see what he'd like to do and make sure you're ready for that more so. But really, anyone I've ever trained for, they always come into the cage and they do something completely different I wasn't expecting. So I've got to really just be ready for everything and, make sure I give my best and give them something that they haven't seen from me before to maybe surprise them and catch them off guard.
And for you, obviously, I mean, anyone, they know your age, being, where you're at. I mean, how much is it one of those things of like, look, I know, time is running out in terms of those opportunities. Is it like, man, I got to try to get in the most fights as I can to potentially get, bigger and better things in the sport?
No, not really. Age hasn't bothered me yet. When it does bother me and it becomes a factor, then it's time to retire. It's time to be done. But until then, I'm going to keep on, fighting and learning and getting better as if I was, a 22, 23 year old. So, I mean, I've gotten better. I am getting better. I'm still getting, I haven't peaked yet. So it's like, why quit now? I haven't hit my best yet. I'm still striving to hit my best and I'm going to. So and it may be a year, it may be 4 or 5 years, I don't know, but as long as my everything's right, physically, mentally, everything is going smooth for me and my mind is just still in this great game, I'm going to keep on knocking people down.
I remember talking to an NFL player about this as he was starting to understand that the end was coming, and he said to me, he goes, look, my body is going to tell me when it's over. Is that pretty much, I mean, listen,
exactly.
You, that's kind of the way I take it. You're like, look, My body's going to tell me when, you know, it's just not, this isn't what I should be doing.
You know, not just your body, it's more so your mind. I mean, I know everyone, we all train so hard, but when it gets down to the nitty gritty, it's really your mind that takes over, and your mind can make you go a little bit further. So it's really, you know, as long as your mindset is still in the game as well. And, you know, as long as you stay in shape and you're not taking injuries, your body should last. Your body should survive for a very long time. It's, you know, just if you can keep your mind focused into what you're doing, you know, because over years, you know, everything changes. So your mind changes as well. So it's just, you know, it's whatever, it's how bad do you want it.
I mean, how much motivation do you just get from those young guys at the gym that are just, they're coming for you every day because, you know, obviously they know your skills, whatnot. I mean, is that, you know, one of the biggest motivation you have is just all these young guys in the gym that are constantly, you know, bringing their best at you every day?
No, I love that. You know, everyone knows I love the competition. I love someone to come in there and knock me around so I can knock them around back. But, you know, I love just, you know, going with these young guys that aren't knowledgeable of what I know since I've done it for so long, and me, you know, giving them the information ahead of schedule, you know, then waiting like years down the line before they pick it up. You know, I like to give them ahead of schedule in the beginning of the game. This is what you need to expect. Don't worry about the nerves. Don't worry about this. Don't worry about that. It's part of it. It's the way it should be. So if it's not that way, then you might have problems then. So I, you know, I just let them know, you know, it's okay. You know, they come up to me, hey, Bobby, I feel like this, I feel like that, I feel like this. I'm like, hey, it's okay, man. This is the way you're supposed to be. Don't worry. It's all going to come together when you get in there. I promise you. And it always does. You know, they get in there, you know, whether they win or lose, you know, they give it their all. So it's good to be there for a lot of these fellas.
In terms of that competitive spirit, does it ever take an off switch when you're not in the room, or like everything you do in your life, that competitive spirit is always there?
Yeah, it is. It's in everything you do. You know, the way you act, the way you react, you know, is the way you should do in everything in life. You know, you work hard at one thing, you should be working hard at everything. You know, if you don't give up on fighting, you're not going to give up in a lot of other things in life. So why not just keep it a consistency, you know?
And of course, you've got this fight coming up here. You know, as you start to, you know, you mentioned about the change in opponent. As you've thought about visualizing, is it just more about, you know, going out there and just being who you are and looking for another stoppage victory?
You know, it's all about being who you are. You know, that's why I started fighting. That's why I'm going to end fighting. I'm going to be who I am. You know, and I'm known for that guy to go out there, give it his all. You know, let's slug it out. You know, I'm not big on submissions now. If I see a submission, I'm not saying I won't take it, but you know, I feel better about myself when I get to knock you silly. So that's just you know, that's the way I am. That's the way I'm going to go.
Bobby, man, as always, I appreciate time. Good luck in the upcoming fight. And, of course, fans can watch, if they're not in the area, can watch this on ShamrockFC.com. Bobby, thanks, man.
Hey, thank you, man. Take care.
Daniel, that was my conversation with Bobby Volker, a vet of this sport, and interested to see how he, you know, does he maybe ever get back to, you know, maybe it's Bellator, obviously, with their connection with Shamrock FC. I will note on the MMAReport.com, I do have an interview up with Anthony Garrett, who is a heavyweight, a 3-1 heavyweight, and it was really interesting talking to him where he said that, you know, look, his goal is just to become a champion, whether it's a champion in Shamrock, whether it's a champion in Bellator. You know, he noted that he would love to get on that Bellator card in April in Missouri. You know, a couple other names that are recognized to me, some guys that have been on Shamrock cards before. Anthony Durow, he's in the co-main event of this fight card, taking on Josh Weston. Anthony Garrett going to be taking on Chris Beal, Thomas Thatcher against Keegan Mullen, Raul Romero against Dylan Tolbert, and Jacob Thrall against Zach Mead. That is the main card. As I mentioned, if you do want to watch that main card or that whole fight card, you can do that on ShamrockFightingChampionships.com. But of course, you know, Daniel, there's always a ton of regional MMA going on. Of course, Access TV, they've got some regional MMA going on Friday night. CES 48, of course, was supposed to be headlined by Matt Bissett, but of course now Matt in the UFC going to be headlined by Greg Rebello, taking on Travis View for the CES heavyweight title. We had Greg on the podcast last week. Not too many guys have 96 professional fights like Travis View is. I remember when Travis was in Bellator, and I would see him, and I'm like, how does this guy make 205 pounds? Like, apparently he would cut 40 or 50 pounds to get to 205.
That is actually insane. I don't understand how that's possible, because this is a guy who may cut down to make heavyweight now against Gregor Bello. I don't know how big he is, but
I would bet you he cuts weight. Yeah, he's big. He hasn't fought in like a year. I talked to somebody close to him, basically said that, he was concentrating on some other things, but, this opportunity came about and took advantage of it. There's a lot of notable names on this fight card. You're going to hear from Brian Moreno here momentarily, stepping back inside competition for the first time in 7 years after two tours in Afghanistan. Dylan Lockhart, who I had a chance to talk to him, he's an undefeated featherweight. You can check that interview on the MMAreport.com. Rico DeSculo, of course, that's a guy that, if you follow Northeast MMA, has been a guy there. Tim Caron, 8-1, 185-pound fighter. Has had a couple fights in Bellator. Did have a loss in Bellator. It was only his pro loss. He's a guy to pay attention to. A lot of guys on the preliminary card, this fight card, making their pro debut. But when you're talking about Northeast MMA and the prospects that are going on there, most likely they've gone through CES MMA, and there's, I look at a guy like Rico DeSculo at 135 pounds. Another win or two, I know he would love to get on the Contender Series, which seems to me that's where everyone wants to go. I don't know how much of that is because they know that the pay is $5,000 to show, $5,000 to win. I think that probably plays into a lot of why guys want to go to the Contender Series. But to me, when it comes to this card, Rico DeSculo, Tim Caron, they're really the two guys to pay attention to.
Yeah, I think is there a bias here? Are you just going with guys that you interviewed?
No, there's not a bias here. It's based on just, the various people I talk up there in the Northeast that I value their opinion.
Yeah, okay. Well, I did love the I do love that I can kind of watch this card. All those fights are going to be on the broadcast, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay, I'm looking forward to that. Then I will DVR it. And, I think these are fights where it's going to be devastating to either guy if they lose, because it does seem like the formula for CES or really any promotion is you got your A side and then you got your D side, maybe your E side. Like, it is a pretty big gap.
There's no question about that. When you talk about the A side, B side of the fight, I mean, you look at just records. Tim Caron, 8-1, taking on Timothy Woods, 7-5. Rico DeSculo, 8-1, taking on Jamie Hernandez, 3-1. Dylan Lockhart, who's 4-0, takes on Shane Manley, who's 3-3. Brian Moreno, 5-1, takes on Jerome Mickle, who is 2-3.
Yeah, so I'm going to watch this, though, because these are names you got to watch. I'm looking forward to the broadcast. I don't even know who the commentary team is. I'm looking forward to see who that is, but I will get back to you. I will watch this card on Access, Jason, and we can talk about it. I think Travis Hugh is going to have a real issue against Gregor Bello, though. I think Gregor Bello should be the favorite to win, and I think he gets a finish in the first round via strikes.
Yeah, I mean, I think he tries. He probably Travis probably tries to wrestle Greg. Greg tries to keep this fight on the feet, but look, Greg can get a win there. I think he puts himself in really good position. Potentially, maybe he can get a UFC opportunity at some point. But speaking of CES MMA 48, I'll let you hear my conversation with Brian Moreno. I had a chance to talk to him about his return to MMA for the first time in 7 years.
Brian, I appreciate the time. First off, thank you for your service as you did two tours in Afghanistan. What ultimately led you back to say, you know what, I want to get another fight in?
I always knew I was going to. I was doing a lot of lifting, like powerlifting. I dabbled with the idea of like powerlifting or strongman competitions. And I got, I guess, like too big. I had too much muscle. So I was like, all right, I got to do some cardio. I went to a cardio type of boxing gym, Elite Boxing and Fitness in North Attleboro. And I say within 15 minutes hitting the bag, I like, that was it. I had the itch. I needed the competition. I've always been somebody that, thrive off competition. How far and how hard can I push my body? And like I said, just hitting the bag, I was like, all right, I need to get back in. I need to do this.
And I saw on your Facebook page, you wrote hashtag don't call it a comeback.
Yeah, no, I always knew I was coming back.
Did it take you some time to kind of get back into the flow of, just that preparations you got to put your body through for a fight?
A little bit. I was, everything I do, like, no matter what it is, I do it 100%. There's no, like, you know, even if it's negative things, you know what I mean? Like, whatever, I take things too far and I get like, they just overwhelm me and take over my everything, you know? When it was lifting, that was it. That was all I wanted to do was, like, I always tell people I tried to lift the world, you know? I set goals and I smashed those goals. I'm like, all right, I want to deadlift 450. I got 450. All right, let's get 500. I got that. It just keep going further and further. So I just, like, you know, kept pressing and kept going. And so a little bit, yeah, because, you know, I'm, like, I'm 32 years old now, you know. I was 25 when I was fighting before. Because of the military, the deployments, I have, like, you know, hey, some soreness in the knees and lower back and whatnot. But as I got back into shape and started leaning out and whatnot and got my body used to it again, everything was fine. And it just got right back into that rhythm. It took a little bit to find the rhythm, but once I did, that was it.
And of course, you've got this fight here coming up here against Jerome Mickle, 2-3. In his career, you talk about, you know, setting goals. Is there any goals that you have for? I mean, obviously the win is the ultimate goal, but is there anything else that you're looking to accomplish in this matchup?
I think Jerome's actually 3-3. All six of his pro fights were last year, so he's active. You know, for this fight, goals just pressure. Make it look like Khabib. I'm constantly moving forward, never taking a step back, always in his face. Just push the pace, set the pace, drag him into deep water, and just go from there.
I got to ask the nickname BJ. How did you get it?
My grandfather, my name's Brian Joseph. So, you know, young, growing up, I think, you know, my grandfather, who's, well, he's a veteran too. He was in the Korean War. Just, he gave me that nickname. I was probably like 3-4 years old, and it just stuck going through high school and everything. I, you know, everybody called me that. Teachers called me that. Like, that was my name. There's people, like, still that if you say Brian Marino, they're like, who's that? They know he is BJ Marino, you know? Growing up with that nickname, you know, you got to be kind of a, I guess, like a wise ass. You got to be quick witty, you know, because that's walking into being made fun of. But if you just come back with something even funnier, then they're like, oh, all right, never mind.
Now, did anybody inside your gym try to give you a different, maybe a fight nickname?
No, not really. I don't know. Lately, it's been Skinny. I go to the gym, everyone's calling me Skinny lately, because like I said, when I first came back, I was just all about lifting, you know? So I was big. I always say, like, I was so big, I could barely, like, I couldn't move. I couldn't get out of my own way, you know? I could lift you up, but in a cage, that does no good, you know? So, you know, just leaning out and whatnot every time, especially now coming close to the fight, every day in the gym. Hey, man, you look skinny. You're getting skinny.
Now, when we're talking about how much weight have you dropped since getting back into fight shape?
I was at heaviest, I was like 207. Right now, this morning, I was 76. So I'm only 10 pounds, 11 pounds away from fight weight. And I got, you know, 13 days to weigh in. So the weight's coming off easy. That's not an issue at all.
Is the weight cut the hardest thing for you?
No, not really. It's, you know, the plan is to eventually get down to 55. Because this is just the start of it. This isn't just that last hurrah. Like, I'm back to stay, you know what I mean? I'm going to be fighting for a while. So, like, it just eating right, a lot of cardio, and just staying consistent with it. That's really all it is. Like, I was bigger and I was had bigger muscles and I was stronger, but I also, you know, I had that, like, that power lifter or body, like, that gut and, like, bloat type thing, you know, where now I'm leaning out, I'm eating right, doing everything I need to do, and just cardio, and that alone just is helping out too.
I know how much visualization is huge in the fight game, visualizing how you're going to go in there. For you, as you visualize it, how much of your visualization has just been that walk to the cage? I mean, how much have you thought about what that's going to feel like for you on fight night?
Oh, yeah. That's funny you brought that up. I was talking to Joe Lozon today about it in the gym this morning. Like, I literally would be – like I always, like I said, I always knew I was going to come back and fight. So I would be – on a mountaintop in Afghanistan, on a combat mission, and just daydreaming of it, you know? And I've wanted this. I knew I was going to come back and do this, and it's finally here. So So I've envisioned every bit of this so many times that, like, I think for me, that walk, everybody who fights has nerves. If you don't have nerves when you're in the locker room before you walk out and everything, like, you're, I don't know, like, so, like, ice in your veins or whatever, but, like, you got to use that nervous energy for your, you know, to turn it into something positive. Like, I think that walk is just going to be like, yep, here I am. I'm back home. This is where I belong. And I feed off of the crowd. I mean, that place is going to be full. I've sold about 150 tickets. Like, we call it Marino Mafia, all my fans. That place is going to be full of Marino Mafia. So I'm going to feed off of that, their energy, and just get in the cage, get back home to where I belong, and do what I got to do.
Have you picked out the walkout song?
No, not yet. I don't, I'm not sure what I'm going to use yet. I don't know. I got some ideas, but I don't know. I'm not sure.
And, of course, this fight here, but I want to go back to June 5th, 2009, your first pro fight. What do you remember about that night?
I remember, actually, you just said walkout. I remember I used Turn the Page, the song Turn the Page, for my walkout song for that fight. That was that's my father's favorite song. And my dad's by far my biggest fan in this whole fight game. I didn't say anything to him about it. As soon as I came on, you know, I walked by him, just kind of looked at him, gave him that look. And that's, you know, like, I remember my first fight ever, my first amateur fight, hearing, like, getting in the cage and being like, holy shit, like, how do I get out of this without, like, what am I doing? I don't belong in here. The ref said fight, and that was it, fight or flight. I fought my way through, and I fought it out. Same thing. The first pro fight, I was like, whoa, I heard the cage door lock. I was like, this is real. Like, I'm really doing this. Everyone, you know, you got that fight or flight, and that's it. No way to find out what you're made of than locking yourself in a cage with another grown man who's trying to rip your head off.
I know nerves are a part of this game because, I mean, you know, the guy standing across from him, he wants to rip your head off just like you want to rip his head off. Is it one of those things of the nerves is there until they lock that door? Then once they lock the door, you're like, hey, it's just me, him, and the ref. Let's do this thing.
Yeah. I think this one, he's throwing punches, kicks, knees, and elbows at me. You know, he's not throwing RPGs. He's not throwing grenades. Like, with what I've gone through, like, of course there's nerves. You know what I mean? Nobody wants to get beat in front of their friends and family and their fans. Nobody wants to train for this and lose and whatnot. But I think, like, keeping that in the back of my mind is going to, like, calm my nerves, so to say. Kind of like, I'm not going to die, you know? This is what I love to do. And this is why I've been training. This is it. You know, this is what, like I said, I've been daydreaming for 7 years, you know, I've been thinking about this, the final fight, come back. Now I'm here.
Final thing, Brian, this question I love to ask all the guys out there because, you know, a lot of times you don't get to control the narrative about your story, how you want fans to know you. What would you want fans to know about you that are going to be watching this fight card here in first weekend of February?
I don't get into that whole, like, talking trash thing or anything like that. You know, I do this. I'm not like some big crazy ego guy where, like, walk around with a chip on my shoulder. You know, it's for me, it's like, it's respect. Like, I respect my opponent. He's been training for me. I've been training for him, you know, just hardworking and respectful. Like, I don't buy, like I said, I don't buy into the whole talking trash thing. I personally think, like, people that do that, it's kind of like, they're insecure in their own training camp. They don't. They haven't put the work in, so they're trying to get into their own head. You know, I know Jerome's been training. I know he's ready for this. I know I've been training. I know I'm ready for this. I know this is the first fight that, like, I can't think of any holes. Like, I can't think of, like, oh, I should have done this harder. I should have done that harder. I should have done more conditioning. I should have, like, it's this. This is everything to me right now. Like, I eat, sleep, breathe this fight. I'm laid off. I'm not working right now. So I you know, I'm teaching classes at Elite Boxing, but, like, I'm collecting unemployment right now. So thankfully I wake up, train, hang out, eat, train. Like, this is my life. But back to your question, just you know, hardworking and respectable. There's no need to buy into any of like the talking trash gimmicky type things and whatnot, you know.
How can people follow you on social media?
Brian J. Marino on Facebook and B. Marino 508 on Instagram.
All right, Daniel, that was my conversation with Brian Marino. He is going to be the opening fight of the CES card on Friday night on Access TV, so we look forward to seeing that. But we want to wrap up this week's edition of the podcast by talking about some UFC and Bellator news. And let's start off first off on the Bellator side of things. Paul Daly, he comes out with a Facebook post mentioning that he wanted to be released and that a Bellator executive had said they were going to grant that. And then there's a story, I believe it was on MMA Junkie, saying, you know, a senior Bellator official told them that he was not released, which I sat there and said, why doesn't senior Bellator official put their name on the story? Come on.
How many senior Bellator officials are they?
Look, first off, if you're asking whether a fighter has been released or not, you know, I understand if you want to go through the PR people to get a hold of Scott Coker or Rich Chow, but or Mike Kogan. But those are the three guys you talk to whether the guy's going to be under contract anymore. And, you know, Paul was on the MMA Hour this week, you know, talking about it. Obviously, there's some frustration there. You know, look, you hear frustration from Bellator fighters on they want to be more active. I mean, hell, we heard out Rory McDonald last year. You know, I think if Paul somehow gets released in the next month, if I am the UFC, I sign him for UFC London.
Yeah, I do, man. It's been a very long time since he punched Josh Koscheck in the face, but he is due for a comeback. And
you would not be and look, they would not pull this guy from the Orlando car because he's from Orlando. But could you imagine at some point if the UFC booked Paul Daly versus Mike Perry?
Oh, you'd have to get extra security in the cage just in case. But
hey, hashtag would watch.
Yeah, man. I mean, I would like to see Paul Daly take on Tim Means, too.
Yeah.
I mean, the list goes on. I mean, if he wins some fights, I would love to see him fight Ponzinibbio.
But I also think it's a bad move if Bellator does grant him his release. I think it sets a bad precedent.
It's a bad story for Bellator. Jesus, can you imagine waking up and you're a senior official and you see that story? I mean, that's a story. I was under the impression that he was released. I guess he's not. Look, man, Paul Daly needs to fight Michael Page. Like, why is that fight not booked, Jason?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, Paul has said that they wanted to do that fight at a certain date, that a date he wasn't going to be ready for or whatnot. I mean, that's absolutely the fight to make.
Dude, do it at the – ask Paul, when are you ready to fight, Paul? And then you make that fight, okay? That fight, people want to – I want to see that fight happen. These two guys don't like each other. I believe Paul Daly's mother was involved. Maybe it was Michael Page. I don't know whose mother. But there was a time when somebody talked to somebody's mother in the cage, Jason. Who was it?
Oh, no, you're thinking of Michael Chiesa.
Oh, no. That is true. That did happen. But I'm pretty sure when Michael Page and – Paul Daly got in like the in you know the like they were you know doing their little scuffle that somebody's mother was there. I can't remember who though. I'm just gonna Google both their names and mother. Still can't. Oh yeah, Paul Daly's mother was there. She was like cage side or something while they created their scene at Bellator 179.
When they did the whole you know he ran at Michael Page. I mean, look, it's clearly the fight to make. You know. Scott Coker, you know, indirectly said it 2 weeks ago that they offered a fight and that Paul didn't take it. You know, and obviously it's – I think at the end of the day, I mean, look, you know, Paul, Scott Coker, Rich Chow, and Paul's manager, just get on a Skype conference call and settle it out, figure out what you got to do. But, look, Bellator, they do have a problem where fighters feel that, hey, you know, I want to be more active than what I am. And I think it does hurt Bellator – in the potential of getting some fighters where they sit there and say, you know, am I going to get that three fights a year that I want? Where, you know, in the UFC, you know, as long as you're healthy, you're getting three fights a year because they have a billion fight cards.
Yeah, they do have a billion fight cards. And, you know, Bellator has quite a few fight cards and they put on a lot of fights on their fight cards. I think it's you look at your roster. If these guys aren't getting three fights a year, you're doing your card wrong. I understand that you can only do four fights on your main card, and it's going to really screw over your budget if you're doing eight fights that matter, right? And you're doing, you know, four fights on ParamountNetwork.com or whatever that are – you got established names on there. But simply put, if you're a fight promotion, you got to get these guys booked three times a year if they can go. Otherwise, it's like – I mean, can you imagine being an employee somewhere and you're being told that you can't work, you know, 50% of the year?
Yeah. No,
it's just
you understand the frustration of the fighter. You absolutely understand that frustration, but this is where, you know, you just got to have a conversation, sit down with each other and figure out what it is. By the way, speaking of Bellator, we mentioned a little earlier, Primus and Chandler. That rematch going to take place April 13th in St. Charles, Missouri. So we'll finally get that matchup. By the way, speaking of lightweight matchup, Poirier Gaethje is going to headline the UFC on Fox card in April. Condit Matt Brown, the co-main event. That's what a Fox card is supposed to look like.
Yeah, I hashtag would watch, as you say often. And look, man, I'm going to knock on some wood because Jesus, that fight card is not happening. I don't know who's going to get hurt. But I'm looking forward to this fight card, Jason. But as soon as we're done recording, I'm going to pretend like he told me the lineup because I don't want to get excited and it doesn't happen because that is such a beautiful 1-2 punch. And then if you litter the rest of that main card with two more fights that hashtag would watch, like, we are due for a night of violence. So those are the only two fights I see announced in Arizona.
Yeah.
But you're talking about a great main event, UFC 223, with a solid co-main event in Namajunas Jan Jacek. Follow that up with a really good Fox card. That's when we're talking about UFC begins to generate momentum once again. And it's right in April, which is after the first 3 months of the year, which I guess kind of goes back to what we were saying in the beginning of the show.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of UFC 223, of course, that's going to be headlined by Tony Ferguson, Khabib Nurmagomedov, I guess, for the interim lightweight title, I guess. But I like Eddie Alvarez's theory on why Conor McGregor has not been stripped. He said this on the MAR on Monday, saying, quote, "I saw another theory online, and I'm like, oh, that's exactly what it is. What going on is this fight between Nurmagomedov and Ferguson is 0-3. They're not going to strip Conor of a belt and then have a vacant title for a fight that's 0-3. They have not been able to make this fight. Every time they book it, they're not able to make the fight. Either Khabib gets hurt or Tony gets hurt or someone gets hurt. So I think what the UFC thinking, and this is a theory, it's just an opinion on my part, this fight is not going to happen. It's very unlikely that it's going to happen, so they're not going to strip the champion and then have this fight fall through and then not have a champion. So I think the day of the weigh-ins, they're going to strip Conor McGregor, and it's going to make really big news. Then they're going to have a title fight, and that's also going to make big news, so it's going to make a lot of publicity in one day. That's my theory." I like Eddie Alvarez's theory.
I'm not sure if he may be giving them too much credit for like all the meticulous thinking, but that is genius. That is, whoa, like next level thinking, you know, controversy creates cash. That's a big storyline. You vacated the day before the show. Oh my God, that's amazing. I think, look, again, I don't think that is what their thought process is. I think their thought process is we're not taking the title until we absolutely have to. But that is just absolutely phenomenal theory, and I'm totally down for it. Now, if that fight doesn't take place, I don't know what happens. I think you still got to do a fight, and maybe someone like Al Quinta could get the opportunity of his life. You know, he's fighting. He's scheduled to fight Paul Felder there at UFC 223. But maybe if somebody pulls out, he's there, right place, right time, and he finds himself in a lightweight championship fight.
Come on, it's going to be Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather for the UFC lightweight title. What are you talking about?
Is there going to be an alligator? Is there going to be a moat of alligators around it? Oh my God.
Mayweather tweeted a video on Tuesday of him entering an MMA cage, which was at Syndicate MMA, which of course got people talking. I retweeted it. I was like, hey, I'll retweet this. I mean, like, the more as time goes on, I'm like, we are going to see a rematch between these two guys. There's going to be too much money on the table.
It's probably just going to be at WrestleMania.
I just, man, It's not going to be surprising.
I don't think – how could that be an MMA fight? Like, that is so – such a bad idea for Floyd Mayweather. You know, boxing, Conor was able to survive, but, dude, mixed martial arts, like, no, that is not – that does not go well for boxers. You know, I don't know how Conor was licensed to box Floyd Mayweather. I don't know how the hell he licensed Floyd Mayweather to fight Conor McGregor. It's going to happen in every state except for probably California because, you know, Andy Foster has guts.
Oh, I bet you California would license that fight. But first off, you know, if Floyd Mayweather is ever fighting again, you know it's going to be in Nevada. Yeah. You know, and as you know, look, WWE needs to make big fights. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but, you know, it wouldn't shock me if we see those two guys tangled up in some way again.
Well, you said WWE, and I thought,
WWE.
Well, I was going to say WWE, you know what they could do? They could do Floyd Mayweather and Ronda Rousey.
Mixed tag team match?
No, just straight up.
Maybe Ronda and Connor against Floyd and...
What's a Pauly Maggiani? Pauly Maggiani.
I was going to mention Ronda Rousey. I know I did see... there were definitely a section of the MMA fan base that was not really thrilled with MMA websites kind of really... reporting on what's going on with Ronda Rousey. You know, the interview she did on ESPN, I thought was fascinating. The fact of she did not want to talk about, you know, her last two MMA fights and correlate the fact of, you know, when her judo career ended, how she needed something else. MMA obviously got careers over. She needed something else. Now she's found WWE. I don't know if that's something that WWE likes hearing, but also, you know, I do kind of wonder, I wonder about the fan base. Will the WWE fan base embrace her?
I think so. I think the WWE fan base has pockets of hardcore fans that won't. And those pockets of fans are in locations like Philadelphia, Chicago, and New York. So, you know, there's a likelihood that if she goes out in front of those crowds and you know, the Royal Rumble, which she debuted at, was in Philadelphia. And people did pop for her. They did cheer. But, yeah, she could maybe – the smart marks might not necessarily be down. But she's probably going to get over pretty big. I'm pretty sure what's going to happen is they're going to put her in a position where she's feuding with, like, Stephanie McMahon. So that puts her in a great spot. But at the end of the day, I mean, this is perfect for the WWE because they've now got – two fighters who would be big stars in the UFC and Brock Lesnar and Ronda Rousey. And simply put, Ronda Rousey is just a mainstream star. And any time either of these promotions can get their hands on one, you got to. So, look, Ronda Rousey certainly isn't going to – she's probably going to be on the Brock Lesnar schedule where she works a few times out of the year for the WWE, and that's going to rub some people the wrong way, Jason. But – This is a big deal for the WWE, and it shows because they probably showed out a lot of money. Because when she came out at the Royal Rumble, and bad reputation, you know, that cost a lot of money to get it done, and it was kind of obvious she was going to come out because it was the Royal Rumble, and they put the women's Royal Rumble on last. They put the men's Royal Rumble earlier on the show. So at that point, it's like if Ronda Rousey doesn't come out, the crowd's going to riot.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm sure it's probably added a lot of subscriptions, you know, for Royal Rumble and for WrestleMania. That casual sports fan that's probably going to tune in and see what she does. I'll say this, you know, there's been a lot of people, you know, kind of debating, do we see Brock back in the UFC in 2018? I say yes.
Yeah, I do too. I believe his contract comes up after WrestleMania. I think he wants money, and I believe he wants to find the UFC again, and I believe he's aware of time. So he's had a run in the WWE the entire year where he's champion, and I think this is the type of guy who once he does something for a year, 2 years, he wants to change it up a little bit, and he understands when he's gone, he generates more value. So looking at his age, I think so. I understand he's not a part of the testing pool, so he's going to have to sit out a while, right, Jason?
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine, you know, because I think he's not eligible to actually fight till July, I want to say. I think he got a year for what happened last year. But yeah.
Is that still active? Like, if he's not does that, like, that doesn't get extended if he's not?
No. I mean, he would still have to go through the 6 months of testing. Okay. But you tell me yes or no when we see Brock in the UFC in 2018. I say yes.
Yeah, I think his opponent's going to be Josh Barnett.
Ooh, Josh Barnett's he's had not too many good things to say about USADA.
I guess that's a good point too.
His process, but you know, it's going to be interesting to kind of see how that does play out there. The final thing to mention here on this week's podcast came out on Monday. The Professional Fighters League has signed a distribution deal with NBC, SN, and Facebook. Reading the press release, pretty much sounds like a barter deal, a little revenue stream between the entities. And I hope this thing succeeds. I really do. I hope it succeeds. I hope it does well. But when you're talking about the first show is June 7th, and it sounds like they're going to ask guys to essentially fight five times in, 6 months? Whew. I wonder if there are people in there that are thinking about potential bad things that could happen. Medical suspensions. What happens if all of a sudden a guy can't make weight? You know, what if you go to California and Andy Foster says, I'm not licensing a guy in that weight class? I sure as hell hope this thing succeeds, but man, you're asking guys to fight a lot of times in a short amount of time. I mean, I'm sure that's, you know, a lot of guys are really excited about that, but there's a lot of bad things can happen. But as I said, I hope this thing succeeds.
Me too, man. I really do hope it succeeds, and I don't think it will, but I hope it does. And you mentioned it. You've got to have plan B, C, D, and E, because it is a guarantee that this won't go off without a hitch when it comes to getting guys, everybody to fight that often. It's just a guarantee. We see it each and every fight night. There's a suspension due to just severe damage causing the fight. And there are so many other things, injuries in training camp. So it's going to be hard to pull off. I hope it works out. The deal's interesting. I'm not super sure how great the numbers will be on Facebook. I would assume most people are going to watch on NBC Sports, but maybe I'm totally wrong. Maybe they got it figured out. So the sport is much healthier when there are more alternatives, and I do hope the Pro Fight League figures it out with their deal here on TV and on Facebook.
I like the thought process of the regular season fights, which are going to be June, July, August, September, I guess. You know, are going to be on Thursday nights. I like that idea because, hey, then you're the only, you know, game in town when it comes to MMA. But the October, when the playoffs start, you're going to go on Saturday nights, which means you're going up against college football. You're most likely going up against the UFC. I don't necessarily like that decision, but I hope this thing succeeds. You know, but then when you look at, you know, what I would probably classify as this being a barter deal between the two entities, if you're paying out $10 million in this league, I love the format of it. I just go, how does the promotion make their money back?
It's going to be a tough proposition, Jason. It's a big idea. It is a big idea. And it's going to be interesting to see where we're at in October to see whether or not this is really panned out. But if I had to guess, they probably won't make their money back.
No, you know, as I said, I hope this thing succeeds, but, you know, if I was them, I would be trying to bring in maybe someone who had worked for Bellator on their tournament days to maybe help them get through this process. That would just be me, but I doubt that thing's going to happen. But that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report Podcast. Of course, you always hear this on RadioInfluence.com, Apple Podcast, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play. Final thing, who wins on Sunday, New England or Philly?
One team has Nick Foles and another team has Tom Brady, Jason. I'll go with the New England Patriots. But I will say this. The Patriots are most vulnerable when they're big favorites in Super Bowls. So I'm going Patriots. Who do you got?
I'm going Patriots as well. You mentioned Brady, Bill Belichick.
Yeah. We'll see. This could be quite an upset. And man, I feel for you, Minnesota fans. That you're one game away from watching your Vikings in the Super Bowl.
And probably you look at the two teams in the Super Bowl, maybe the two most hated teams in all of the league.
I know, two of the most insane fan bases. Man, the fact that that whole story about the wiping Crisco on the poles in Philadelphia so they wouldn't climb it. I'm so scared for America and Philadelphia Sunday night, no matter what happens.
I've never understood why in sports do people like try to terrorize their town if their team wins a championship. I've never understood that. It's not a good time.
Yeah, I know. People are crazy. That's the lesson we've learned as massive sports fans.
Yeah, I've just never understood that. But that'll wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Be sure to check out all the podcasts we have available on RadioInfluence.com. If you're looking for coverage of Super Bowl 52, be sure to check out the Landry Football Podcast, episodes on Tuesday and on Thursday. Also, the Fabulous Sports Babe, she'll be previewing the Super Bowl 52 matchup as well. Three Dog Thursday with TJ Reeves and Kevin Rogers, also games galore. So we have you covered for Super Bowl 52 cover. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. And by the way, coming up next week on the podcast, he's going to be joined by Ben Wynn to preview his matchup at UFC 221.
This is an In the Trenches with Ian Beckles. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Jacksonville showed up to play. And I don't know if New England has much better personnel than Jacksonville. I think Jacksonville might be even more talented than New England. But the football gods were not going to let Blake Bortles go into New England in the AFC Championship game and beat Tom Brady. The gods won't allow that. It's just it'll get misaligned. They don't want that. Watching that game yesterday when they're up 14-3, and I was at Elmer's watching the game, and they had a couple Jacksonville fans, and they said, "I told you, New England's defense isn't that good." And I go, "You ever hear the word adjustment?" And from that point on, they scored 3 points. New England figures it out. They always figure it out. And they're not just making. You always hear a lot of teams talking about halftime adjustments. And some teams make them and some teams don't. That's true. If you watch the New England Patriots, their coaches and Belichick as well is making adjustments after every single series. Like he's telling everybody what the other team's doing because he knows the game that well. And he's making adjustments during the game. Okay, so I'm telling you, that's when you have Tom Brady and you have Bill Belichick, don't bet against them. And at the end of the game, if Tom Brady has the ball in his hand, you're in trouble.
In the Trenches with Ian Beckles can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.